Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on regarding marriage licenses when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you have no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important. It's the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding and it's more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know less about that than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, about two-thirds of all marriages here in the United States will end in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect or defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And then you should write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about this thing of the law and the marriage contract. To do that, just call direct. The number is 417-273-4967 and ask for our free 4-hour commentary on the law school, the CD package. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number to call now is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's an easy one to remember. It's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I want you to do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, regarding marriage licenses, oftentimes people will write letters and they ask questions and they call on the phone. And we have a letter here from a young lady and she said, I spoke with your wife a week or so ago regarding marriage licenses. And my fiancé and I have been engaged since July of last year and we're having trouble finding good solid information in support of not getting a marriage license. Now, to add to this, my parents are strongly opposed to the idea, and they refuse to be any part of it, or to pay for it, without one, and mainly because they think that if we were to get a divorce, or something were to happen to Nate, I would be left with nothing. Now, can you please help us by providing any resources, documentation, or evidence that proves not getting a marriage license is for the better of our family, and that we will be protected in the event of divorce or death? And also, can you please explain how we can get married without a marriage license? Are there any additional implications that we need to be aware of? Now, Nate is an avid listener and an admirer of your online radio talk show, and we very much appreciate your insight, opinion, and time. We would also like for you to know that we have attempted to research this very extensively, but we have not had much success, and therefore we are turning to you as a last resort. Please let us know if you have any questions, and thank you so much. And signed by Kim. Well, Kim, you're not the only person that writes and asks this question. So let me run through, and I'm going to answer your questions. So if you've got a copy of your email here, let's run through it again. Let me answer the questions for you one at a time, and then we'll take a look and we'll dissect this and we'll do a legal analysis of this thing called a marriage license and a marriage and divorce. You start off and you say, I spoke with your wife a week or so ago regarding marriage licenses. My fiancé and I have been engaged since July of last year, and we're having trouble finding good, solid information in support of not getting a marriage license. Now, the reason that you're having a problem finding it, there isn't a book out there that says how to marry without a marriage license or families without marriage licenses. And when you went to college and you went to high school, there weren't any classes or there weren't any stories about marriage and marriage licenses. You get a one-sided story in the public education system. So let's ask this question. How many different ways can you get married? I mean, we all know about getting married with a marriage license, but how many different ways do people marry? And the answer is three. Do you know what those are? And did you learn that in college? Did you learn that in social studies? Did they teach you that in the ninth grade or seventh grade? They say, okay, now listen, boys and girls, someday you're going to get married. So here's the three ways that this can occur. Did your church teach you that? When you went to church, did the pastor stand up and say, now listen, let me explain the difference between biblical marriage and civil law marriage? Anybody ever say that? Now, it's not because there isn't any information out there, there isn't any knowledge. What were people doing before marriage licenses? Well, let me ask this. When did the first marriage license get issued? Was that at the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve? Did Abraham and Sarah have a marriage license? And if so, who issued it? Did King David get a marriage license when he married Bathsheba? I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. When did marriage licenses come into vogue in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, America, Florida, California? When did you people start doing that? And I thought marriage was a religious business. When did the church start issuing marriage licenses? Do they? Have they? Who thought up marriage license anyway? Well, you go on to say, to add to this, my parents are strongly opposed to the idea and refuse to have any part of it or pay for it without one. Well, listen, your parents went to public school too, didn't they? Now think about this for a minute. What do your parents know about marriage licenses? Do they know how many different types of marriages there are? When did marriage licenses come into vogue in your state? When did the marriage license first make its appearance? What about Abraham and Sarah having a marriage license and who issued it? Come on. Your parents are the sum net total product of all of their experiences and education in life. When they went to school, did they go to Marriage License 101? I mean, I went to the public school system. Nobody taught me about marriage licenses. I went to church a couple, three times, and nobody said anything about marriage licenses to me. And I learned, just like probably you did, from my parents and from my church and from my peers around me, that a marriage license is necessary and imperative. Everybody gets one, and so why ask questions about it? It's just something you do. It's like a social security number. Everybody's got one, and it's the thing to do. And if you don't have one, you can't get a job. And so we all go down and get a marriage license, but nobody ever asks why. Nobody ever goes into the law book and says, well, is it a requirement? Many people, you know, call here and say, well, a social security number is the law. You have to have a marriage, you have to have a social security number because there's a law. And so I ask them, well, what's the penalty for the violation of that law? And they, well, I don't know. Okay. Where is that law that requires me to get one? I don't know. They're sure there is one. There's got to be one there somewhere because it's so universal. Everybody does it. So it's not surprising that your parents are opposed to marriage without a marriage license. It's the only thing they know. I had a guy here the other day. He wrote me a letter and he said, I'm not satisfied with the warranty deed. I'm not satisfied with the quit claim deed that you gave me, and I want a warranty deed. And so I wrote him a letter back and I said, sir, when I sold you this piece of property, in the contract for sale, on line 14, paragraph 2, it says specifically that upon completion of the payments, that I will issue to you a quit claim deed. There's nothing in this contract that calls for a warranty deed. And so I'm not going to give you a warranty deed, sir. And I have already delivered to you the quit claim deed. Why did this man want a warranty deed? Well, somebody told him that if he didn't have a warranty deed, he was SOL. He needed one. Now, let me give you a little secret here. There's no such thing as a warranty deed. It doesn't exist. It's what we call in law a fiction of law. Now, warranty deeds are as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. Everybody has a warranty deed. Now, go look up warranty deed in Corpus Juris Secundum, Corpus Juris, or American Jurisprudence, or a legal dictionary. And it doesn't exist. That's not to say that we don't have warranty deeds out there. Hell, they're selling them every day. So a question arises, well, how many different kinds of deeds are there? Does anybody know the answer to that? I do. The answer is 6. And warranty deed ain't one of them. So your parents then are the net sum product, the net sum total of all of their experiences and education in life. They don't know how many kinds of deeds there are, but they probably have a house and they probably have a warranty deed issued by a title insurance company. It's the way everybody buys and sells property. Now, when we ask the question, should we have a warranty deed? I don't know if you should have a warranty deed or not. George Gordon shouldn't have one, and I don't. But whether or not you should have a warranty deed is a choice that you have to make in life. Now, I would suggest that people become educated as to all 6 deeds and then make a selection based upon your own personal druthers and your own experience in life and your own desires and aspirations in life. And maybe a warranty deed is for you. And if you want one, hell, you can get one. Go down to any title company and they'll sell you a warranty deed. Now, I'm not going to get off into deeds and tell you all about deeds now because we want to talk about divorce and remarriage. But the point I want to make is that people do what other people around them do. Your mother and father probably have a Social Security number. I don't have one. I used to have one. And I looked it up and I researched it out and I came to a conclusion one day. I said, this Social Security number is bad for me. It isn't good for me. It doesn't accomplish for me the things in life that I want to accomplish. And so I rescinded mine. I don't have one. And I'm 70 years old and I don't draw Social Security benefits. And that's just peculiar. And when I tell people that, they look at me like I'm Mork from Mork. And they say, what the hell's the matter with you? You must be a lunatic. Didn't you pay money into Social Security? I did. And did you get your money back? I didn't. Well, don't you want to get your money back? I'd love to. Well, why don't you go down and sign up for it? Because there's strings attached to it that I don't want the liabilities for. Well, what liabilities are there? Well, that's another long story. And we'll talk about Social Security and the strings and liabilities attached to Social Security at some future date. Like we'll talk about warranty deeds and quit claim deeds and fee offment deeds and statutory deeds. And, you know, we can talk about different legal subjects, you know, and should you do this or not. So let's start off with this. He says, you want me to give you a legal reason why you should not have a marriage license, or can I show you you know, from my experience and my education, why it is that you should follow George Gordon? And the answer is no, I haven't got a clue. I don't know what's good for you, Kim. I don't know what's good for Nate. I don't know what's good for your parents. Now, my mother and father had a marriage license, and they got divorced. I don't know that the marriage license caused the divorce, and I'm not making that allegation. I'm just pointing out that the marriage license didn't prevent divorce, did it? Now, divorce happens in life, and we'll talk about divorce as we progress along here, because divorce is a part and parcel with marriage, and it's a part and parcel with the marriage license. And there's an outcome that comes from these actions that we make. When you get a warranty deed, there's an outcome. You get a quitclaim deed, there's an outcome. Get a fiaffment deed, grant deed, there's an outcome comes from it. If the outcome that comes from a grant deed is the outcome that you want in life, that's the deed you want. Not because it's the only deed you know about or somebody sold you that deed. It's the deed that you need to seek out and the deed you need to find, the deed you need to record, the deed you need to use, because that provides you with the outcome that you're looking for in life. Now, a civil law marriage is a modality of marriage that has evolved over time, and it fills a need. There are people out there that need a civil law marriage and a marriage license. And George Gordon is not one of those. I don't know if Kim and Nate are one of those. I don't know if your mother and father is one of those. So it's not my role in life to persuade you that I'm right and you ought not to have a marriage license. My role in life is to show you that there are alternatives out there and that there are strings attached and there are consequences that come from your actions and that you should be informed of and you should be aware of the outcome that is going to occur when you get a marriage license. And if that's the outcome that you want, that's the program for you. Now, if for some reason that isn't the outcome that you want, and the strings that are attached to the marriage license and the liabilities that attach to it are things that you don't want, then you ought to avoid a marriage license like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I think that that's just reason, logic, and common sense. All right? So don't get mad at your parents now and say, well, you know, they're opposed to this. It's probably the only thing they know. Maybe they're very familiar with the three forms of marriage, and maybe they've come to the conclusion that the civil law marriage is the best form of marriage, and that they want to sell that to you, and they're fully informed. Or it may be that they're woefully ill-informed, uninformed, don't have a clue as to anything other than, and therefore they're shooting in the dark. I don't know. I don't know your parents. I don't know what their educational level is. Going on, you say, can you please help us providing any resources, documentation, or evidence that proves that not getting a marriage license is for the better of our family and that we will be protected in the event of a divorce or death? And the answer to that is yes, I can. Yes, and I'm going to do that. I have two schools. In my first school that I recommend to students that are beginning, it's tax and status. In chapters 43 and 44, we have, I'm just going to look here. I've got a little pile of paper here, and I'm going to say that there's 50 pages here in these two chapters. 58 and a half by 11 pages. And they represent 32 reasons why I don't have a marriage license. 32 reasons. So you ask me, are there any? The answer is yes. How many? 32. And then there's a second story. It's a whole school with, I forgot now, I put this on here the other day. I think there's 50 lessons or more, 58 lessons in my family court school, in which we not only dissect the marriage license, we get into the nitty-gritty of things like divorce, you know, custody orders, child support. Listen to some of these right here. We talk about alimony, child support, custody, dissolution, divorce, protective custody, restraining orders, We have chapters in there. We go through step by step so that, you know, people that are divorced and are trying to get custody of their children, or they've had their children taken and they're in foster care or something like that, and we go through that in detail. You know, this is the way the game is played. This is the way the law reads. This is the way you research it out. So we have one whole school that's just devoted to this whole subject of marriage and divorce and custody and alimony and child support and family court and the whole ball of wax. Okay? And then I ask the question, what did people do before marriage licenses? What were people doing when they didn't have marriage licenses? What do people do in countries that don't have marriage licenses? How do those people live? You know, maybe they don't live as well. Maybe there's all kinds of problems and hang-ups that the marriage license solves, and maybe that's the best solution, and we ought to look into that and find out. You know, maybe that's true. But it always reminds me when wintertime comes, when you're watching the CBS Evening News, you know, or Brian Williams in the news, and they'll have a story in there about the price of heating oil in New England. People up in New England, they heat with heating oil. See? And when these cold snaps come in, and they'll bring the cameras up, and they'll show a heating oil truck, and the guy's pulling the hose and sticking the nozzle in, and the price is $4 a gallon, and they'll interview some guy, I just don't know what I'm going to do with this heating oil at $4 a gallon. I don't know if I'm going to eat or not. I might have to eat Alpo dog food. You know, and it makes a story, see? And the rest of us around the country, you know, we cry and we lament and we say, oh, those poor people up in Boston. Why doesn't the government do something like go up there and buy heating oil for the people in Boston? You know? Let me ask this question. How long has Boston, Massachusetts been there? Hell, it was there when Paul Revere was riding around the countryside telling people the Redcoats was coming, wasn't it? So there was life in Boston, Massachusetts before heating oil, wasn't there? I mean, come on, kids, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Heating oil is something that comes from petroleum. And the first oil well drilled in America was Drake's Oil Well in Pennsylvania in 1859. You know, the year before the Civil War broke out, remember? Or two. Was there life in Boston before 1859 when Drake discovered oil? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, there were people living in Boston, Massachusetts in 1840, in 1800, 1776. Now, it's put the ringer in here. How in the hell did those people heat their homes before heating oil? And then why don't we go back to doing it the same way they did before heating oil and tell the Arabs to stick their oil up their hind ends? Huh? No, I'm not opposed to heating oil. No. It's a hell of a neat way to heat your house. And if the price is $14 a gallon and you can't afford heating oil, maybe you got to heat your house some other way. You ever thought about that? Now, I'll tell you this. Not everybody in Boston, Massachusetts heats their house with heating oil. There's got to be one guy somewhere in Boston that heats his house and doesn't have heating oil. And I would submit to you, if there's one guy that can do that, then two could do it, and then four, and then eight, and then 16, and, you know. Now, I don't use heating oil to heat my house. And the prevailing theory behind heat in this country here where I'm at is propane. And most people heat with propane, but not all of us do. I heat with wood. And I'm very happy with my wood. And I get an outcome from that. Saves me about $2 a gallon for propane. And you see where we're going here, Kim? There are solutions because there are alternatives. There's people that have been doing this for a long time. And so if we could find out, well, what were people doing in 1776 before marriage licenses? Now, a lot of times people will say to me, well, if you don't have a marriage license, you don't have a marriage, and the children that are born from a marriage without a marriage license are illegitimate. What's the argument behind that? What's the legal basis for illegitimacy? Well, there's a thing called a bastard, and there's a thing called an illegitimate. A bastard is commonly referred to as being illegitimate, but if you look up the legal terms, a bastard is somebody that is born and is of racial mixture. The President of the United States of America, Barack Obama, is a bastard. That's not a derogatory term, that's a legal term. He's born from a white mother and a black father at a miscegenated marriage. The outcome of that are called mulattoes. Those mulattoes in law are called bastards. Now, that doesn't make Barack Obama illegitimate. He could inherit from his father and his mother. Now, illegitimate means you cannot inherit. Doesn't have anything to do with your racial mixture. Now, oftentimes people go to school, they get out of school, they go to college, they get out of college, and they go out and they make their livings in life, and they live their lives, and they die, and they're buried in a hole in the ground, never know the difference between a bastard and an illegitimate. Well, now you know. I just told you. If you don't believe me, go look it up. Hell, you can spell illegitimate, can't you? You can spell bastard, can't you? I'm not telling you something here, you know, telling you tales out of school. But here's the point I'm making. People are willingly ignorant. They are dumb on purpose because they're lazy. They don't want to find out. They don't want to go look that up. It takes too much time, effort, and energy to do that. Now, I'm not accusing you of being lazy because you could not find this information. Can you please explain how we can get married without a license, marriage license? And are there any additional implications that we should be aware of? The answer is yes and yes. I can explain to you how you can get married without a marriage license. Now, when you ask me that question, I don't know how old you are, Kim. You sound like, you know, you're 23 years old or something like that. Probably been to college. Can I tell you how you can get married without a marriage license? And I presume that you don't know how to do that. It reminds me of the story of Columbus when he came back from the New World. They had a big banquet. And at the banquet, they were serving boiled eggs in the shell, in bowls on the tables. And somebody got loud and raucous, you know, as the party was getting going good. They're drinking a lot of wine and having a good time. And so some guy got kind of boisterous and loudmouthed, and he says, this sailing west, discovering the new world over here is no big deal. Anybody could have done it. And he wasn't whistling Dixie there. You know, there were lots of sailors in the world when Columbus set sail. And those people were sailing around the Cape Horn, and they were sailing through the Indian Ocean, and they were sailing around all over the world. They didn't want to get too far away from land, of course, but they were sailors, and they could run boats, and they knew. And so his point was, anybody could have pointed a boat west and sailed west until they found land. Now, Columbus was the first guy to do this, the first European, you know, up to that time. At least they thought so at that point in time. And so Columbus, he was feeling kind of poor about that. So he said, well, listen, if you think that sailing west and discovering the new world was so easy, let me ask you this. Can you stand an egg on its small end? And so the party's really warming up now, see? And so people are out here trying to stand this egg on the small end. Now, you can test this yourself. Take a boiled egg now, not a fresh egg, a boiled egg, and try to stand it on the small end. And then while you're at it, try to stand it on the large end. I mean, you just try to stand it on its end. Now, it'll lay on its side fairly easy. Even I can do that. But standing it on the small end requires some skill and ability, requires some knowledge. And so everybody in around the banquet hall now, everybody's reaching for an egg, everybody's trying to balance an egg on the small end, and predictably nobody can do it. Nobody knows how to stand an egg on the small end. And so pretty soon the loudmouth over here says, well, Columbus, if you're so damn smart, why don't you show us how to stand an egg on the small end? And Columbus stood up in front of everybody and said, okay, now I'll be happy to do that. So he took an egg, and he held it in his hand over the table, and he dropped it and smashed the small end flat. Test it. You know, take a boiled egg and hit it on the table. Bang! On the table. and it'll smash the small end flat. And then take your hand off of it, and it'll stand right up there on the small end. Now, of course, the guy complained and said, but you broke the eggshell. And Columbus said, I didn't say anything about breaking the eggshell. I asked you if you could stand an egg on the small end. And you couldn't do it. But now I would submit that any of you people in here can stand an egg on the small end now that I've showed you how. Well, Kim, as soon as I show you how, you too will be able to marry without a marriage license. I understand that right now you don't know how. Nobody's ever showed you. But I can show you. I'm married. I don't have a marriage license. I know how to do it. So, you ask the right guy. Asking your parents probably won't help you very much because they probably don't know. But that doesn't mean that they're dumb and that they can't learn. And then I can teach them. I can teach you. But it still doesn't go to the question of, well, should I or should I not get a marriage license? See, we haven't got to that point yet. And I'm not here to convince or to persuade you that you should or should not get a marriage license. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what the marriage license is, and we'll take a look at it. And we'll take a look at common law marriage and patriarchal marriage. We'll take a look at it from the perspective of God and the Scripture, and take a look at it from the point of view of history and the legal implications that go with it. And then I'll just leave it up to you and say, well, now, why don't you choose? There's three forms of marriage. There's six forms of deeds. Choose one. And there are three forms of marriage. And when you get through here, you can choose whichever one that you and Nate decide that's good for you. How's that for a plan? Meanwhile, we're at the halfway point, so let's take a look here at the mid-course reminders here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. That means by invitation only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give out, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine alone, they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't blame them, blame me. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we'd invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org. And then if you don't want to go there, you can call us direct, just like Kim did. She called here and said, hey, tell me about these marriage licenses. And that number is 417-273-4967. Now, I'm going to take a little time and explain this over the air. We'll just kind of take a little time, effort, and energy here and explore marriage licenses and divorce and patriarchal marriage and the biblical history behind it and so on. And that's because a lot of people ask this very same question. And it takes a lot of pages here. And if I answer this question one at a time, then I got to go over to my copy machine. And Kim's saying, hey, I want you to send me all this documentation. And Kim, I'm too old and too lazy to do that. So I'm just going to tell you the answer and tell you where you can go find out and show you where the sources are. And then if you really want to get serious, you know, then you might want to come to school here. See? And a lot of times people want to know, what in the hell would I want to go to your crummy law school for when I could go to Harvard? Well, the reason that you'd want to go to law school here is because I'm going to give you 32 reasons why you don't want a marriage license, and you can't learn that at the Harvard Law School because they don't teach it there. And if you're a lawyer, you probably didn't know until I just told you that there's three forms of marriage. You know, and you got a law degree, for crying out loud. You know, letters after your name, and you probably didn't know that. Now, it isn't that lawyers and judges couldn't figure it out, because they all know how to do legal research, and Kim, you probably don't know how to do legal research, but because you come to law school, and one of the first things we want to do is show you how to go look this up in the law. And so when you said, we're turning to you as a last resort, because we don't know how to figure out where to go find it, that's perfectly understandable. You know, you went to college, and the last thing they're going to do is teach you how to do legal research in college. That's the bailiwick of the legal profession. That's their monopoly. It's kind of like medicine. They will never teach you that activated charcoal will neutralize most poison. Why? It's cheap, inexpensive. And we want to sell stomach pumps and ER visits. And so here's something that's very simple. You take arsenic, and then you follow it with activated charcoal, and it'll neutralize the arsenic, and you don't need to go to the ER, and you don't need a stomach pump, and that's what people for thousands of years have been doing for acute poisoning. Now, most people don't know that. Most doctors do know that, and they don't use it, and it's because it's cheap and effective. Doctors don't make money on cheap and effective solutions to medical problems. Doctors make money when they sell bypass surgery. Doctors don't make money by telling you not to eat fat and blood, which is what causes the constrictions in your arteries to start with. Fat, F-A-T. Two laws in the Bible. You shall eat no manner of fat. You got it straight from the Creator Himself. Why? You don't have enough digestive juices in your stomach to digest the fat. People ask me, how come dogs can eat fat and they don't get heart attacks? Dogs have a lot of hydrochloric acid in their stomach. And if you want to test it, just go out to where any dog is tied up, and there is no vegetation where you tie up a dog. That dog's feces is so toxic that it kills everything in the ground. Okay, that's why dogs and buzzards and coyotes and wolves can eat carrion, and you can't. I mean, there's just simple, straightforward reasons why. And they don't always tell us, and that's because there's a monetary interest involved. And that's why they're not telling you about marriage licenses and divorce and remarriage. It's because there's a monetary reason. Somebody's making money off of marriage licenses and the strings that are attached to them. That's all. No big mystery there. Now, most people are satisfied and happy with their marriages and their marriage licenses and the strings that are attached. And they don't have a problem. They don't ask questions. But there's the divorce angle here. And you ask about divorce. Am I going to be protected if Nate dies or if Nate divorces me or vice versa? And the answer is, well, it depends on what law you're practicing here. See, what did people do before marriage licenses when they got divorced? Well, now that's quite a little story. In 1900, my grandmother got divorced. It wasn't in 1900. She got divorced about 1905, five, six, seven, along in there, I think it was. And, oh, my God, she told me that in 1907, when she got divorced, it was so uncommon that she was shunned. I mean, it was like being an Amish person, you know, and you've been shunned, disfellowshipped, you're excommunicated. And she said it was God-awful tough. Now, she told me that in the 1950s, you know, when I was a young boy. And she said, but now, see, divorce is so common, you know. Women that are divorced are not shunned. They're not looked upon as being whores and adulteresses and so on. But in 1907, they were. Now, the divorce rate back about 1900 was 8 per 100,000. 8 divorces out of 100,000 marriages. Today, the divorce rate is 67% here in the United States. That's in your lifetime, Kim. When you and Nate marry, statistically, two out of every three marriages are going to end in divorce within the lifetimes of those people. That's pretty phenomenal. Now, if that's what you're looking for a divorce, a marriage license is the simple, straight expedient for accomplishing that end. If you don't want a divorce, then the system that was in place in 1900, before marriage licenses were common, is probably the better modality. And that's because under the patriarchal system of marriage, the biblical system, divorce is very, very rare, not unheard of, because Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4, provides for divorce. There's a divorce statute in the Bible, just one. And there it is, it's in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. And we'll talk about Matthew 5, 31, 32 as we progress, and Luke 16, 18, and Mark 10, 13, you know, as we progress along. When I get to the divorce angle, we'll talk about that in greater detail. But for right now, I just wanted to point out that there have been marriages on planet Earth for 6,000 years, and there have been divorces on planet Earth for 6,000 years, and is designed that way by the creator of the universe, live and direct himself. How's that? Now, divorce isn't a very good outcome. I'm divorced, and I can tell you from personal experience that if you and Nate can avoid divorce, you want to do that. If there's any way in the world you can avoid divorce, you want to steer clear of divorce. I mean, that's like having an appendix operation or your tonsils removed, you know. If there's any way that you can live your life with your appendix and with your tonsils, by all means, do that. You know, and if for some reason you can't and you have to have them removed, well, okay, suck it in and let's go get the job done. But I'm going to tell you right now that it's not pleasant and you're going to have a lot of bad experience. And so God tells you the same thing. But from time to time, there may be some cases where a divorce is necessary. Now, there's a fellow here. I'm going to start off here. There's a fellow by the name of Dr. Everett Sillivan, spelled S-I-L-E-V-E-N. He was a Baptist pastor who gained renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than to license his school. And in a recent talk to a Missouri congregation, here's what he had to say. So now let's take a look at this thing of licensing. The license. What is it? You have a driver's license. You have a business. You get a business license. And you get married. You get a marriage license. And you want to open a Denny's franchise. You get a Denny's franchise license. In other words, licensing is very common. And so there's a definition for it. And so we start our analysis with what is a license. Now, a license, when you look it up in the dictionary, this is a legal dictionary now. If you look up license in Webster's, you'll get a different take on it than you do in a legal dictionary. So you need to go to Bouvier's 1914 legal dictionary. And if you've got a Bouvier's 1872, those are the official definitions of words used in the judicial system in the United States, enacted by Congress in 1872. It's Bouvier's 1872 dictionary. But the 1914 is pretty good. And then there's other dictionaries out there also. I'm not saying that's the only one. That's what I'm using. That's what I'm going by. So, a license is permission. A license is permission to do something. Okay? So when you get a marriage license, you're getting permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. So when you and Nate get married, what illegal activity do you want to do for which you need this license? What tort do you and Nate want to commit for which you need this license to avoid a penalty? Now, if you're an average person, you say, well, I don't want to break any laws. I don't want to commit any torts. I don't want to do something that's illegal or unlawful. Okay. Well, most people go down and get a marriage license, and they, too, do not want to do anything that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. But once they've got the license, they're prepared and ready to do just that. Most people, when they get the marriage license, do not actually go out and commit an illegal act. But if they did, they're licensed to do that. So, you know, that's kind of bizarre coming right out of the chute. And I think we ought to ask ourselves the question, if you don't want to do anything that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass, then what the hell do you want a license for? Because that's the purpose for a license. It's to give you the authority to break some law. Whose law did you want to break? What tort or trespass did you want to commit? Against who? For which you needed this license. And you ought to ask yourself that question, you know, for your business license and your driver's license. What's this all about anyway? Nobody ever asks these questions. Only here at the law school do we ask questions like this. Hell, they don't ask questions like this at the Harvard Law School. They just tell you, go down and get your driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate, and shut up and follow the crowd. Don't ask. Don't tell. Now, this guy, Everett Sullivan over here, the Baptist pastor, you know, he didn't license his school, and he got into trouble because he didn't have this license. Now, if you don't have a license, do you always get into trouble? We'll take a look at that. Now, I don't have a marriage license, and I'm not getting into any trouble. I don't have a business license, and I'm operating a law school, and I'm not getting into any trouble. So, you know, what's different about me? You know, how do I do that? Have I got some special dispensation, you know? Did the Pope bless me in some special way so that I can get away with all these crimes? Do I belong to the Bush crime family? You know, no, none of the above. And I'm not breaking any laws, and that's why I don't have any licenses. I don't want to commit any illegal acts, torts, and trespasses against anybody. So that's why I don't have a license. Now, many people, this is Sullivan speaking now, he's talking to a congregation of people. He says, now, many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? Now, let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. I've never been charged with breaking the law. I've never been charged with committing a crime, and I've never had a trial. This guy's in jail, never had a trial, never been charged with a crime, and he's in jail. What's that all about? They didn't license his school. He's teaching these little children in his Baptist school, and he doesn't have licensed certified teachers, and they locked him up in jail. What's that all about? So you ask again, how in the world did they get you into jail? Well, I may know nothing about your church here, and I may hit you here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell churches. They sued the corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state, and the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took the license out for. All right? So when you get a marriage license, you are going to lose some constitutional rights that you would otherwise have if you didn't have the license. Okay? So one of my 32 reasons why I do not want a marriage license is because it causes me to lose some, not all, but some of my constitutional rights. Now, right away, you're going to say, well, how many constitutional rights do you have? The answer is 1,100. I have about 1,100 rights. Now, none of those rights are available to me unless I can claim them. So if people say, well, I've got rights. No, they don't. They don't even know what the hell they're talking about. The only rights that you people have out there are the rights that you can claim on the courtroom floor. And if you can't claim them, you don't have them. That's how simple that works. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter, just here to tell you. Had a judge ask me that one time, said, how many rights have you got? And I articulated about 7 or 8 or 10 maybe. And he said, that's very good. That's very good. He said, actually, you have about 1,100. The 7 or 8 that you can articulate are about, that's about the extent of all of your rights, Mr. Gordon, are those 10 that you know about. And then the other 1,090 that you don't know about aren't available to you. You don't know them, you can't claim them, and if you can't claim them, you don't have them. So for most people, the fact that they have 1,100 rights here in the United States is irrelevant and immaterial. They're not available to them because they don't know what they are. And if you went out and you asked the average Joe Sixpack lawyer with a Harvard Law School degree, how many rights do you have? He wouldn't know. And how many rights can he claim? Probably not many more than you could. He'll be able to claim more, but not many more. I'll bet you, you Harvard Law School law student graduates could not name 100 rights that you have available to you. And if you want to take the test, why don't you sit down and start writing them out? How many you got? He says, now I'm going to give you a shocker. He says, I don't like to do these things because it makes me look so ridiculous. But you see, we've learned some things. For 6 years, we went down to the legislature and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Now, I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say that the legislature of Nebraska did not give us the relief that we were seeking. And I'm glad they didn't, because the Constitution says that it's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify, and they would weep and say, these are our children. God gave us these children, and we are responsible for them, as they'd look across the table at those senators. And so picture this, you know, here you are testifying before a Senate committee. And you're testifying and you're saying, well, these are our children, and God gave us these children, and we own these children, and we want to educate them in Baptist Christian theology, and we're Christians and we're good people, and so on. Now, Senator Pfeiffer, who was a young man about 38 years old, he was an attorney, he was a legislator, and he was a member of the Subcommittee on Education. And as the parents were testifying, Mr. Pfeiffer looked back across the table. And he said to this one young mother who had just completed her testimony. Now, listen to this. Here's Senator Pfeiffer, a legislator, a senator now. He says, madam, do you have a state marriage license? Kim, listen up now. Pay attention. The senator looks back across the table. Just picture yourself being here. You're a young mother, and you're testifying to the senator. I'm sending my little girl to the Baptist school because it's my little girl, and I love her, and I want to give her the best education that I can. See? And you're testifying here. Picture yourself there. And the senator said, do you have a state marriage license? And the young woman said, yes, I do. And the senator responded by saying, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? All right, now there's a second reason. I don't want my children to be wards of the state. And every child born with a state marriage license is a ward of the state. And there are constitutional and other legal implications that come from that. So if that's what you want, Kim, get after it. Now, if you're sitting there saying, well, I'm not sure that that's good for me. Well, I don't know if being a ward of the state or your children being wards of the state is good for you or not. It's a choice that you got to make. You know? Now, your parents had you as a child, and you were a ward of the state. Were there any strings attached that you can think of that posed a problem that you're concerned about? Now, Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me debating the issue, and what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the State School Board Association and by the executive director of the Teachers Union. Four people said the same thing. We were on Channel 6 live at 5. This lady looks over at me and she says, "Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers. It surely must not be that important of an issue." And I said, "You're right. There's a way to solve this problem. National standardized testing. We had our students tested by the state's own experts. And we're a year ahead of the public schools. We're 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools. We were so good, in fact, the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record." So she looks over at Senator Hoagland and she said, "Senator, why is Nebraska making such a big deal out of this?" Now listen up, folks. Here's what Senator Peter Hoagland said to the whole listening audience. Quote, "The reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate their children in their doctrine. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of a one-world socialist order. And their children will not fit in." Kim, wake up now. Let's smell some coffee here. Here's Senator Hoagland. He's just telling you the way it is. Senator Pfeiffer said, "You got a child. The child is a ward of the state because the marriage license is a privilege granted by the state. Now, if you want a marriage based upon the privilege granted by the state as opposed to the right that you have to your family, your children, your marriage, that's a choice for you to make. Would you rather have a right or a privilege?" Now remember, rights belong to you. They're a property. A privilege is a permission. Permission can be withheld. Permission can be suspended. Permission can be taken away. And so you have a choice to make here. Now, Pastor Sullivan learned from experience how these licenses work. The same thing is true with your driver's license, business license, marriage license, driver's license. I mean, they're all the same. And so coming out of the chute now, I've given you 4 or 5 reasons here as to why I don't think a marriage license is exactly what I want. This doesn't answer all the story. We still have another 40 or 50 pages here to cover, but that'll open the conversation. That'll tell us that a marriage license is a 3-party limited general partnership between you, Nate, and the state. Now, if you want the state and the bureaucracy in your bedroom, invite them in. I tried it. I didn't care too much for it. And so I woke up one day and I said, you know, if I ever do this marriage trick again, I think I'm going to do something different. So I did. So I married my wife, the second wife, and a nice lady. And she and I researched this out, and we came to the conclusion that we could have a marriage, we could make a deal, we could have a business, a marriage business, without the state of Missouri. And we do. My wife and I have a marriage, and we get along quite nicely together. Without the state of Missouri and without the government, without Social Lady, without the public schools or anybody else involved in our marriage business. Now, how's that for a plan? Hey, I'm about out of time here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there, and I've got to remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We'll take this up again tomorrow. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.